We'll reconvene. So, Mr. Ellison, are you proceeding first? Edward.
I feel attentive. Good timing. It's lucky how it came in to be here. Come down, I hope for the higher tonight. Mahimahi, if I'm not there, the Mahia, the QRPC, could be review of the especially pay respect to those who have gone before us, those who have departed this life by tragic accidents in recent times, and others who have lived long lives and have gone beyond the Greenstone Veil. Sheltering haven, greetings, let's say. Whatever can come to do you well, you know, one to Delta or Tera or Tera, to the Earth Commander, and to the beautiful places of this district, greetings.
Suitable for you to do the same as your whanaunga from Murihuku did, and all of you present your summaries and then we question and the appropriate person answer, would that be the most suitable?
That sounds like a wonderful idea.
We'll proceed on that basis then.
Thank you. Right. So my name is Mark Ellison. I was born in 1955 and I I lived in Chiba, see the window of Karatame for 1 year of my life, and the chief person of Taiti Gura Brunei, Kotaki, and I held that position for more than 20 years. I am Taiti Gura facilitator of a Brunei Reporting Kopa Taiti, which focuses on matters pertaining to the natural environment, and also the representative of my Brunei Tūrunga Ngātahu, the tribal council. Within my Runaka, I am recognised as a recognised cultural expert with common life. Our whānau, when I say our whānau, my particular whānau, Wilson whānau, had a long association with the Queensland Lakes District in the late 1980s and early 1990s. So I travelled as part of a upe, a group, made up of representatives of Otago, Wairaki, and Pukaraki, to Takahia, to whenua, this concept of trampling the land and warming the places of our tipuna. We sought to warm the Waikitoka and Waikitapu ancestor crossing for the Otago Rock, the Wanaka and the Hauwe districts. We were told that Paki Waitara, stories and histories we knew of within this area, and such cultural associations form our connection to these places, and obviously we've heard an explanation of that previously, so I won't go on that too far. We visited the Plumeria rivers and old settlement sites we knew of throughout the Waikitapu area, offering our own karakia to honour the Waiwaira spirit of these special places. Before European settlement, Ngātahu travelled around nearly the whole of Te Waipounui, hunting and gathering the island's resources. Waikitapu Waimaua region was used primarily as a base for seasonal hunting and gathering expeditions and the extraction of pounui. It was also a place where people came to rejuvenate, much as we do today as well. So we come to bask in the sun and sort of admire the beautiful surroundings. But there are people who did that sometimes over a generation to build new populations for maybe foreign further afield. Ngātahu spiritual, cultural and historical values remain in the Queenstown Lakes District today. The locations of ancient settlements deemed significant in Ngātahu traditions and stories are still standing, with place names and whakapapa land entrenched and the landscape endure. If the descendants of the first people of Te Waipounui Ngātahu seek to preserve these historical, spiritual and cultural sites for future generations. The cultural mapping project undertaken by Tūrunga Ngātahu has significantly broadened the breadth and depth of information on the Ngātahu cultural landscape. Extensive cultural research and mapping that has taken place provides the foundation for the proposed Waiatūpuna mapping project. So that's something to sign. Yeah, so pass now over to Marie or Tim.
Marie. Thanks, Dave. My name is Marie Clement-Felsblake and I'm the senior planner at Kaitaka Kētau Limited, where I've been working part-time since 2012. I work with Dunedin City Council Planner Emma Christmas on the development of the Waikitapuna overlay and the related provisions for the proposed second generation Dunedin City plan. Now, Rūnanga Kia Otago support the provisions in Chapter 5 Tangata Whenua of this district plan that provide for the mapping of Waikitapuna. I note that a placeholder has been included in Chapter 26, Historic Heritage for this new thing. So Waikitapuna are sometimes known as cultural or ancestral landscapes. These are landscapes and places that embody the relationship of Ngātahu and their culture and traditions with their ancestral lands, water, sites, Waikitapu and other tangata. The term refers to places that hold the respect of the people in accordance with tikanga. While the term cultural landscapes has been used in the past, these areas are considered distinct from natural landscapes that are protected under Section 6B of the Act. While natural landscapes may include being enriched by historical and cultural values, cultural landscapes may be highly modified sites with their strong historical connections. And they are significant, by contrast, in terms of Section 6E of the Act. Their identification and assessment considers different factors to natural landscapes. For this reason, we recommend that they're treated separately from the natural landscapes identified within the plan and are referred to as Waiheke Kupuna, ancestral places which continue to have contemporary significance. Having said that, a number of the Waiheke Kupuna will overlap with natural landscapes, because the landscapes around which they're based are significant to both my library and the wider community. So in addition to Utapa, this story is also such as landforms, mountains and ranges, wetlands, waterways and lakes are examples of Waiheke Kupuna. The places of significance to Ngarunanga are not limited to places of significance identified in the Ngaitahi Claim Settlement Act, the one that you will have seen included on Post Map 40. They go much broader than that. The process proposed for mapping Waiheke Kupuna in the Queenstown Lakes District will involve Ngarunanga representatives firstly marking up all sites of importance on maps as the basis for a district and overlay. Secondly, identifying the values of each site, so why the site is considered to be a Waiheke Kupuna. So in reference to some comments from Chair Marama about the use of the word values, what we mean in this context is the characteristics or the components of the site. And on paragraph 14 of my evidence, we set out some of those components that we use to name the City Council thing. And thirdly, identifying the threats to those values. So which applications for which type of resource content affect my type of values in that particular place. Kaitaka Otago Limited and Town Marama will then work with council staff to, develop objectives, policies, rules, including the certain matters and notification triggers to ensure that the values of each respective Waiheke Kupuna site are recognised and provided for in consenting processes, as Tim will discuss in his evidence. So this may mean that any consents that are deemed to be a threat to a particular site would automatically trigger assessment of Ngarunanga values in the consenting process. So this removes any doubt that when the council planner receives an application, they click on the location of that application, automatically an overlay pops up that says, this is an important site to Ngaitahu. Is this particular application a threat, yes or no? If it's yes, that triggers automatic consultation. There's no maybes. It's a very clear path to requiring consultation as an affected party. The process ensures that the impact of the proposed activity on the Ngaitahu values of the Waiheke Kupuna are comprehensively understood by both the applicant and council, and that these impacts are assessed as part of any application or resource consent. Mapping the sites and landscapes of importance to Ngarunanga recognises and provides for their relationships with these lands, water sites, Waiheke, and other taonga within the Queenstown Lakes District.
I'm Tim Vaughan, the principal planner for Kaitaka Otago Limited. I've been asked by Ngarunanga to provide evidence in relation to the statutory framework, the integration of Takata Whenua values into the district plan, and the submissions of Chapter 5, Takata Whenua. Overall, I concur with Mr. Pickard that the strategic goal 7, and Chapter 5 should be retained as an outline and supported in the Section 32 assessment, as these provisions provide us for foundation for integration of Takata Whenua values, involvement of Takata Whenua decision making, and recognition of the statutory areas under the Settlement Act. And I also concur that there's a crossover between Chapter 5 and similar provisions in Chapter 26, Historic Heritage. Now, Ngarunanga, in collaboration with Ngātahu Ki Ruruhiku, have undertaken to map Waiheke Kupuna in the district for inclusion in Stage 2 of the district plan review. The mapping of the Waiheke Kupuna will enable the development of provisions that protect the relationship with Ngātahu with their ancestral lands, water sites, and other Waiheke taonga, as Marie has discussed. I anticipate that this may also require amendments to the Stage 1 provisions to ensure that there's consistent provision to public and federal values.
printed throughout the district plan. I've forgotten the print that Michael alluded to. Turning to statutory framework, in my opinion, the institution's goal in Chapter 5 and the inclusion of the Niitoba Clan Settlement sites in Map 40 are consistent with verbal acts, with the proposed original policy statement, and with the Kaitaia Kiatoga Natural Resource Management Plans, which are emergent. Turning to integration. In a little bit of that sought through submission, the integration of Tangata Whenua values throughout to the district plan. In the Mana Whenua planning framework and the proposed Lean City District Plan illustrates one way of achieving that integration. Now, there is one correction I note required to this framework, mainly for discretionary and non-complying activities, where effects on cultural values of Mana Whenua are assessed, the findings of the cultural impact assessment may be required. Finally, turning to the submissions, issue 1, goal 7. Submitters sought the amendment of objective 3271 to see a softening of the stance from acquiring protection of Niitoba values to recognising and dividing. I consider that submissions on this issue can be addressed by adding qualifying paragraphs to this objective as set out in paragraph 30 of my evidence. Issue 2, consultation and mapping. I concur with Mr. Pickard that there is ample information available to formulate and justify this chapter. Mapping of why you took it off. Also provide guidance to plan users on these specific areas of features and significance to plan and care. Issue 3, use of Mana Whenua or Tangata Whenua. This was referred to Nauranga for their guidance. And they have endorsed the use of Tangata Whenua. This is to encourage using the object plan, and they see that it will provide certainty to plan users. Finally, issue 4, again, I concur with Mr. Pickard, local authorities are obligated to, under the Local Government Act and the RMA, to actively engage with Tangata Whenua and to take into account the principle of the treatment of white tangata. In conclusion, the Northern Net have worked with the Regional Council and the New City Council to develop provisions in the regional, proposed regional policy statement. Proposed second generation to be effectively. That protect their values, rights, and interests. In my opinion, goal 7 in chapter 5 also lay a foundation for integration of Tangata Whenua values throughout the proposed principal rights. Thank you, and we invite questions from the panelists.
Thank you, Mr. Bale. I'll go first this time for a change. This issue of the wording of objective 3271, which you referred to in paragraph 30 of your evidence, you've suggested the adding of additional paragraphs to that. I'm just wondering if you... So it's on page 7. I'm just wondering if you could look at that as a planner and consider whether the ABC that you've added at the bottom are actually policies to give effect to the objective rather than an alteration to the objective.
Yes, I agree, and that could be worded as policies.
But that would have the same qualifying effect that you're suggesting, would it?
It would have the same qualifying effect. The key point is that we're not seeking absolute protection. Mm. Okay, that would be as a statement, best practice. What we're looking for fourth application. Is that by the paragraph?
Okay. Thank you. Did you have a question on that, Mr. Commissioner Sinclair? Commissioner Couch Lewis, questions? Questions only.
Commissioner Couch Lewis, kia ora, Tāna Tīra, Pūra. Again, I'd like to acknowledge your submission as well. And how much I enjoyed it. Thank you for that. The one question that I would ask in terms of the mapping in relation to your submission, is there a place for all sites to be identified?
If you're referring to the identification of Wahitapu site, the way we dealt with that in the Dunedin City Plan was that we would map a broad area. So say if it was, for example, Moka Atua, which is commonly known as the Mangatuas or the mountain range near Dunedin Airport, there were a variety of values or characteristics identified within that site, like a trail or a, you know, it's a highly significant mountain top. If there was a particular wahitapu, like a cave or something like that, we would list a wahitapu, but it would be somewhere within that very broad area, the whole mountain range would be mapped. There wouldn't be a dot in a certain place. So if there was a consent application that was listed as a threat of that area, the council would come to my opinion and say, we see that the wahitapu, you need to let us know if that consent application will be affected or it will affect the wahitapu or not. So there's no need to put a dot in a particular place.
It also confirms the placeholder for putting that mapping into the historic heritage chapter. Section 26.11, which currently reads to be confirmed. That's the work we're proposing to do as part of stage two.
So, without talking too far. The appreciation of what you actually wrote is why I asked that question, as to within a submission that when it comes down onto paper that the mood we know that. So part of then for KTO submission, GEO's submission, you are submitting a suggestion of a planning process that has worked for you over on the East Coast and looking to adopt that within the working party that will be doing the work that has been suggested in September. Is that correct?
Can you perhaps illustrate how it is? While this is still opposed, the district plan is still going through the process. I received a phone call from the NZ Council Planner saying, we have a subdivision being proposed at Pukapiki, Dyke Peninsula. I see it's within a map by 2 mile area. Is there an issue of effect for the writer? So we were able to see that even before the plan takes effect, this particular overlay is actually working.
Have you had discussions with Te Ao Marama on looking at using this as a guidance for those discussions?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The
this is the main reason why we ask that you refer this to the Chairman. It's because we're very conscious that this is not an exercise that requires a collaborative work by both American and Tiger Lunar. We didn't want to see it rush.
I just want to go to Tim, if I may, go to your original submission and just go through. I'm interested of your desire to exclude Papakainga. Could you just elaborate a little bit for me on that, please?
Certainly. We looked at, in the joint discussion of the term, we did look at Papakainga and put it on the table. We were just conscious that the provision of Papakainga in the Means Deep District, and we can speak on that, retire specifically to ancestral land. And there isn't the same degree of ancestral land within the Queensland Land Division. Again, it's developing some kind of visions as Marie contested was quite a contract exercise. It took nearly 2 years to work through all these sort of technicalities. And we just felt that it was too big a step at this stage.
In the Dunedin district, we've, in the proposed plan, we've managed to achieve a climate bridge to apply to general land within the native reserves, or the former native reserves. And in the Queenstown district, I understand there's only one very small piece of Māori land, and we just thought it was a step too far to try and seek Papakainga provisions for general land in the Queenstown district at this stage, and we're just focused on getting the important sites protected.
Focusing on
that stage, step two, maybe the next thing.
Focus your energies where they can.
Yeah,
right.
Like future
producing food. I'd like to just go to some of the questions that I asked Te Ao Marama in terms of the certainty in relation to Chapter 3 and Chapter 5. And as I was saying, looking at that crossover, even though you have covered off Mr. Biles in terms of your concurring with Mr. McDermott with some of those changes that have been made. I'd just like to be able to hear from you in terms of what you may have heard me asking to our Marama in terms of that certainty from 3.27, it's the hierarchy, the main one, that gives us good guidance through the plan, then going down into our Chapter 5, and that all those objectives and policies, we have certainly got good coverage in terms of consultation, that those areas of water quality, landscapes, Waihitapu, landscape character is covered.
Yes. Thank you for that question. You raised the question about the difference between the operative and the proposed plan. I suppose my experience working on behalf of Katoki and over the last 8 years is that the operative provisions haven't been well expressed or articulated throughout the plan. And I think this objective 327, in partnership with our provisions in Chapter 5 and Chapter 26, does, I think, give that sort of high degree of certainty for the women that their values will be identified and appropriately protected and then carried through. We don't end up with a chapter that is almost medically sealed, like 13. Those provisions are picked up and carried forward appropriately.
Because we find quite commonly, plans will have a really articulate beautifully worded objectives and policies, but quite often you can flip the tab over and there's nothing throughout the rest of the plan. There's no rules and there's no triggers for notification. And if you think in a standard council, maybe 97% of your consents aren't notified. We might have a relationship agreement where we're saying we're notified consents, but largely we're not saying what's going on in the district. So what we're proposing is a mechanism that has objectives and policies at the front and followed through throughout all of those resource consents that are threatening Ngāi values in particular areas. There is a mechanism to ensure that Ngāi values and viewpoints are considered in that consenting decision. And if you look at my evidence on Tim's evidence on page 14, it says, with respect to resource consent applications, Manukin law will be considered an effective person for all restricted discretionary activities that list effective and cultural values of Manukin law, and all discretionary non-compliant activities in a way to kind of matched area where the activity is identified as a threat. So all of that's bolted down. There's no way out from council. It's all written down in the Wahitūpuna appendix at the end of the plan. And not only that, I know there's some concern about the mapping and whether the mapping can be accurate enough to capture all of those sites and what if we get the mapping slightly wrong. So what we did with Dunedin was we mapped broadly and we listed the values and the threats quite broadly. We tried to foresee things that may occur in the future and that sort of thing. But not only that, if you look down the bottom of that same page 14 of Tim's evidence, it says, even when, under Rule 5.9.2, even when a consent is located outside of a 1250 net area, Kaitahu, so the onus is on us, can advise the councillor to consider that the granting of the consent respects the integrity of the broader environment within which the Wahitūpuna is located, or the linkages between the Wahitūpuna. So that's kind of like a backstop for us. If they're mapping slightly out, the consent's falling in between two sites, we've still got an in. So we consider that this is likely to result in way more concrete outcomes rather than a consent plan and taking a stab in the dark and the application of the desk. I don't know if it's a quite a who's out or not. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I'll just flag it.
So the idea of a no surprises approach is really looking towards. The next op we referred to, hopefully, will provide for that unknown element, which we wind up slightly long outside the Wahitūpuna area, and then for allow that to be considered. So that's really what our thinking was, anyhow. So whether we completely like it, really seemed like, I thought it was a pretty good approach.
Perhaps just to conclude that question and step, I apologise about subject to 5 minutes. I think one of the policies in historic heritage shift sums up what we're trying to achieve, which reads, this is policy 26532, ensure that decision making on development proposals on the effects on tangible and non-tangible values of sites and things demanding are informed by those mandated to do so. I think that's sort of nicely captures what the notification triggers are designed to. So starting from the strategic direction that we can discuss, following the answer.
Just one more time, just making sure that a user of this plan in the interim in stage one, that it is quite clear that they had to consult, not have to, that there is that provision there to consult with NATO, yeah, and that there are steps all the way through the Tangata Whenua chapter to ensure that that happens. But the main area that you're suggesting is that it will be picked up within the heritage chapter.
This was a focus of what we do with Te Aotearoa. I'm confident that the signposts within these chapters are strong enough to direct users of the plan where they need to go in terms of the
versions. But you can probably see that, you know, we don't only have to do the method, we've got a significant amount of work to do with the development of those provisions that are put in mapping into effect. So it's one thing to include a bunch of maps in a plan, and it's another thing to direct the plan users what the effect of those maps is. So you a lot of plans put in the statutory acknowledgement areas, but they don't say what the effect of those areas is. So for example, we had a question previously about Nohoanga, and the way that we dealt with Nohoanga in the Dunedin district plan was we mapped it as a Waikato Pena area, and then we identified the threats to the Nohoanga, which were access, and they were adjacent buildings sort of encroaching on the site. So you'd map the site broader than the actual Nohoanga itself, so then if any consents that were threatening the Nohoanga were applied for in the adjacent area, that would trigger an alert to the council saying, hey, this subdivision is threatening the access required for that, the use of that Nohoanga. So it's just an example to show you how just putting the map in there isn't sufficient. You've got to have a whole lot of provisions developed around those maps.
I had asked the question yesterday about the possibility of maybe defining cultural landscape, because I couldn't find it anywhere within the planning, and cultural heritage, so that's really pinpointed in terms of what is being meant or what is you have done, I thought, in Otago, given an indication in terms of what that means and the characters within those areas. Do you, as we heard from Te Ao Marama just before, of looking at that there is a need for some additional definitions? Is that a possibility? Am I way off being
no, not off being
Is what
are
you
taking
in
a
define in there? I
can't remember.
I think we've described it
in
text.
Yeah. Mm.
But maybe it
would help
to put it in
records. Just a little bit clearer. So when you're reading the objectives or the goal, that it's quite clear about who we're talking about and who should be consulted.
Yeah.
Why?
Maybe it needs sharpened up. It could be sharpened up a bit. I do know that there's a definition of way too in the chapter itself.
Oh,
page 5.3.
Sorry, say that
again. Topic of the chapter, page 5.3, and the definition of way too good.
Yep.
And even on 5.7, or page 5.10, it's actually kind of glossary.
Oh, okay.
The definition of weight.
Oh,
yeah.
It's all about
the I'm just saying it's double good. So it's going to be fine.
Does it cover the wider spectrum? Is that enough?
Yeah, well, in the Dunedin district plan, the values or components of the Wahi Tupuna included things like former Mahina Kai areas that people want to acknowledge, or contemporary Mahina Kai areas, the Ngāi Tahu Settlement Act mechanisms like Nohoanga and the statutory acknowledgement areas. I think so. A very big range. I think I've got it in my original evidence in the table. The range from Nadal battle sites and quarry sites.
Just going into the question about consultation, and can I just get an agreement from you in relation to the wording? They're the same question that I asked Te Ao Marama. The use of elite paragraph 2, the change, the fundamental change that has been suggested in the 42 a report for the introduction section that the change in manager that they will admit to consult.
I suppose the concern we would have about electing to consult also means electing not to consult. Mm-hmm. So again, this comes back, I think, to the issue of certainty. Not only are they entitled, not certainty that they will be consulted, but the values are, I think. But in doing so, they're aware that they need to strike a balance. Provides enough certainty for plan users. As low a surprise as possible, that's what we're talking about. So, quid pro quo for acquiring, actively acquiring consultation, this is currently put in permissions, is to be, I suppose, qualified to an extent by identifying particularly where consultation should occur.
I think you heard, we hopefully heard my question before of including a paragraph explaining the relationship between Ngāi Tahu and Tangata Whenua and the Mana Whenua. Would you be happy with that as a concept? Great. The process post-mapping, thoroughly see what you're getting at. Has there been any discussion about that in terms of council officers? Or has it just been discussion between you and Te Marama?
No, we had a meeting with some of the Queensland Council staff about the proposed mapping with associated provisions, and they were really supportive, and they said that would be really useful for us to be able to identify exactly when a consent is another feature land use. We talked about existing resource consent protocols being buried in layers of papers and, you know, not being actively used.
Okay, so good. I just wanted to make sure that that clarity had gone through. Yeah. Sounds good to have that clarity. Thank you. And just your added issues and outcomes under 5.3 on page 7 of your original submission. You added quite a few issues there.
Yes,
it was Appendix 1, 5.3 issues and outcomes sought by Mana Whenua. Thank you. Nothing for you. It doesn't sound like there's been a whole lot of discussion with Te Amarama about that. This is basically KTKO's submission.
Yes, that is correct.
And can you give us a very quick description of why?
The reason for adding a couple of issues to that list is that the book pretty perfunctory, and I'll sort of, again, that's tied further in mind to issues of particular significance.
And it does answer one, I think a couple actually submitted on the specificity of dairying being too high, so I guess that comes, the increased land use intensification is actually your issue.
That's right. And then, whatever form that intensification might have, again, particularly where it impacts on levels of water.
Right, and more water.
That's cool.
Thank you very much, that's mine.
Mr. Robinson.
Thank you. Mr. Allison, can I just run past you the same question I asked Mr. Skerritt, which is, in effect, the relationship between the Runanga. You said in paragraph 5 of your evidence that Kaitaia ki Otago share a collective interest, and do you share that with your Ngurikaku colleagues as well? Or is there a relationship more complex than that?
It wasn't just one person, well, over ancient times. In other words, we can say the same thing in different ways. Sure,
politician.
Another question for Mr. Allison. Very last. It may have passed me by, but what's the timetable on the mapping and mapping exercise and developing the additional text? When do you, like in a perfect world, when do you hope to have the package together?
Well, the given us to September this year, so it's certainly it's pressing on the minds of our non-managed advisors.
Now, in terms of the discussion of need provisions, have any of the other or closer district councils, CODC, Southland, Westland, closer to QLDC, reached the stage of a second generation plan? Can it? Or are they behind the need?
They're all behind. We are in active discussions with the Central Otago District Council to roll out the same sort of Wahitu Puna mapping as part of the second generation plan there, and they're supportive, and we've done some preliminary mapping as part of that, but we have got to the point of discussing provisions. As you can imagine, like, it's easier to revise chapters and develop mapping and provisions concurrently as opposed to after the fact. We've worked together for over about a year. So with the need mapping, it's taken, we've worked really closely with them for 2 years, and so the provisions, each thread, so if it's network utilities, it sits within the right chapter, so there is that, you can see that the mapping stuff interwoven throughout the thing, whereas it's more like things kind of will be packaged and one place because of the way the provisions evolve. And in answer to your question, the other councils that we work with in Otago are quite at the same stage with their things yet, and I can't comment on those councils outside of Otago.
Thank you for that. Can I take you to rooms, please? Paragraph 13, you talked about, and you highlight this in your summary, that you talk about the difference between 6B landscapes, which where naturalness is a key criterion, versus Wahitu, which, as you say, may be heavily heavily modified or highly modified. Does it follow that, Mr. Biles said, that we're looking for absolute protection? But if cultural landscapes remain important cultural landscapes if they're highly modified, does it, does that also imply that it's not a no development, no effect position that, you, that you'd have to look at on a case-by-case basis?
I think the conclusion that we came to with regard to the natural landscapes was that the Pigeon Bay criteria didn't give due weight to Section 6E matters, and even though considerations of naturalness may include some considerations of cultural value, those considerations would better hinge to 6E, and that there were stronger links. If we make stronger links to Section 6E, Manukino values would be considered more obviously or directly. So, like the way that the Dunedin Wahitu Puna mapping and assessment matters works is that it's not absolute protection. So you're not putting a ring around the site saying thou shalt not do these things in the spot, but it's saying that, say for example, at Tomoka Atua, you've got a prominent mountain range, and you know, provision for network utilities may be a matter of national importance that has to be considered alongside 6E matters. So it requires the council to go and seek information on both those things and balance these national priorities as is required by the 58. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
That I've, busy writing notes or listening to you.
What we found in the past was that under the previous plans, those areas may not even be identified as having Manukino values. So somebody did actually propose a wind farm for the top of Mauka Atua, and with no recognition that that was a significant place for Kaitohu, until somebody translated the name to the people that were supposed to be in, and thought, oh, shit, this might not fly. but there was nothing built into the planning.